This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Pete's Coffee and Tea, introducing Pete's E-Cups, letting you send a friend a cup. On the web at Pete's.com. That's P-E-E-T-S.
Good morning. Good morning. It's Wednesday, February 15th, 2006, and this is the KABU Morning News. I'm Carlos Chavez.
And I'm Brian Smith.
Coming up in this program, Bend Area Legislator Ben Westland dropped his Republican Party registration yesterday afternoon and announced he'll run for governor as an independent. Syria has switched from the dollar to the euro as the primary hard currency for foreign goods and services. And an Australian TV channel has aired previously unpublished images of torture at Abu Ghraib prison in Baghdad. Weather for today calls for partly sunny skies with temperatures reaching the mid-40s.
Portland school board members say they'll have postponed deciding whether to put a local property tax on the May ballot until after Mayor Tom Potter's education summit this week. By law, the school district must notify the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission if it intends to put a tax increase before voters. Monday afternoon, the board learned that the commission would extend the notification deadline from February 15th to March 1st. Tomorrow, Potter will convene an education summit of business and local school leaders, Governor Ted Kulongoski, parents, and others. They will discuss how to fill a $57 million budget shortfall for the coming school year, created by the expiration of several funding sources, including the Multnomah County income tax. City and school leaders have been casting about for a solution to the district's looming budget problems for months. Last week, a poll showed little support for either Potter's proposed 0.95% citywide income tax or a Portland Public Schools only option property tax. Just 35% of Portlanders polled last week said they would vote for Potter's proposed income tax, which would benefit Portland Public Schools and the city's four other school districts, Reynolds, Parkrose, David Douglas, and Centennial. And 55% of those polled within the Portland School District said they'd vote against a local option property tax.
Bend Area Legislator Ben Westland dropped his Republican Party registration yesterday afternoon and announced he'll run for governor as an independent. Westland said Oregon is mired in mediocrity. He blamed extreme partisanship among Democrats and Republicans for the state's political melee. Westland, a state senator from Tumalo, promised to raise campaign issues such as tax reform and universal health care, which he said aren't even discussed these days in the Oregon legislature. Westland's first major hurdle is gathering more than 18,000 signatures by August 29th. That will be more difficult than in the past because of a 2005 law limiting signatures to people who haven't voted for Republican and Democratic candidates in a primary. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
Oregon labor activists are accusing the Democratic and Republican parties of neglecting pocketbook issues. Now they are forming a statewide political organization to represent working people. This from the Salem Statesman Journal. They call it the Working Families Party, modeled after a New York party of the same name formed in 1998. Organizers hope it will help reshape the political debate to be geared toward everyday concerns of most Oregonians, such as wages and health care. Organizers are beginning to gather almost 19,000 signatures needed to get on the statewide ballot. The Praxis Group, a club of progressive students and faculty members at Western Oregon University, voted to help the new party in the Salem area. To raise money, organizers formed a political action committee called Oregonians for Working Families Party. Supporters also recently filed a November 2006 initiative petition that would enable minor parties to put a candidate of the major parties on their ticket. Candidates nominated by the Democrats and Republicans could seek to be on the Working Families Party ticket by agreeing to work on its priority issues. Libertarians could put a sympathetic Republican on the ticket. Supporters say minor parties would gain more influence, reducing voters' sense of futility about their potential.
As the latest immigration bill awaits the Senate Judiciary Committee, debate on the bill stirs much controversy and contradiction. But rarely do you hear an angle of the debate from the perspective of immigrants themselves. Yesterday, the Northwest Federation of Community Organizations released a report titled, In Our Own Words, Immigrants' Experiences in the Northwest. This morning, we're joined via telephone by Ramon Ramirez, president of Piñeros y Campesinos Unidos del Noroeste, otherwise known as PECUN, or the Northwest Tree Planters and Farm Workers Union out of Woodburn, Oregon. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on your program this morning.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Can you give us a brief summary of what's in the report?
The report is called In Our Own Words is a collaboration between about 10 different organizations in Oregon, Washington, and in Idaho. And what we do is document the immigrant experiences since 9/11, which has been filled with horror stories of exploitation, of discrimination, of deaths on the borders. And basically what we're recommending is a need for comprehensive immigration reform. We're opposing the current bill that's awaiting action in the Senate called the Sensenbrenner Bill because it only deals with one aspect of immigration, which is just enforcement and border control. What we actually really need is a comprehensive package.
Who are some of the contributors to the report?
Well, we have, for example, the Idaho Community Action Network. We have the Hate-Free Zone of Washington. Locally in Oregon, it's PECUN, and then we have the statewide coalition of immigrant rights, CAUSA, and then we have the youth organization Latinos Unidos Siempre in Oregon.
What do you hope that the report will accomplish?
Well, what we want to do is basically we want to use it as a tool for educating all people, community people. We wanted to use it to educate politicians, churches, and do an outreach and educating people as far as we can go. And basically, it's a compilation of immigrant stories and the hardships that they've had to suffer through. Even though many of these folks are hardworking, taxpaying folks that have been here for a long time, because we have a broken immigration system. You know, they don't have any legal status, and so they're more susceptible to become victims of crimes. They're easily exploited by unscrupulous employers, and it's about time that we reward people that have, you know, put food on the table of the American people who are the backbone of Oregon's industries, such as food processing and service industry. These people deserve a shot at the American dream, and what this report illustrates is all the hardships that folks have to go through. And a lot of these people are not terrorists. They're not welfare cheats. They're hardworking Americans.
What are some of the H.R. 4437 Sensenbrenner bill? What do you think are some of the most touchy issues of that bill?
Well, I think it's the most mean-spirited piece of legislation that has ever been put on the table. It passed the U.S. Congress, the House of Representatives in December with limited debate, no participation, no discussion. It was sort of ramrodded through the House of Representatives. In fact, one of our Democratic congressmen, Peter DeFalgio, voted for him, and which, you know, we think it's an error on his part to do so, because this is like really, really horrible bill. This is a bill that would criminalize immigrants. This is a bill that will give up to 5 years criminal penalties in prison for anybody that's associated with undocumented folks. You can be a pastor of a church and you're liable to, because you have parishioners that are undocumented, can be liable to criminal penalties. If they deputize school teachers and police officers into becoming immigration agents. One of the most horrific parts of the bill is that is no due process of law. It eliminates Anybody that is apprehended by the immigration in the interior of the United States will face automatic deportation without due process. This is a complete violation of, you know, the laws that we have in our books right now that, you know, that give that kind of protection. We feel that it's not only an attack on immigrants, but it's an attack on all Americans, because once you start attacking the rights of the most vulnerable in terms of civil liberties, then you start eroding the civil liberties of all folks. So those are some of the provisions that are the most dangerous, right? In fact, on March 4th, there's a coalition being formed in Portland that will that is planning for a massive march in protest of the Sensenbrenner Bill. And, you know, the Sensenbrenner Bill, I think, is very dangerous in another aspect, in that, you know, it's fuming and exacerbating, you know, discrimination and fear in the general public. In fact, the three Republican candidates for the governor's race have all made this one of their main issues. And it's a real shame on them, you know. In fact, yeah, we think it's a slap in the face of Latinos and of immigrants throughout the states, because we have three Republican candidates, Ron Saxon, Atkinson, and Mannix, all running a anti-immigrant campaign. You know, first of all, this is a federal issue, and we're in agreement in one thing. We need to fix our broken immigration law. But for a governor or a candidate for governor in the state to run an agenda attacking immigrants, who are the backbone, who have made the Oregon economy prosper, to attack them is insane. You know, yeah, these people are not visionaries. These people are not do not intend to bring all Oregonians together to make Oregon prosper. It's a shame that they have to stoop so low politically to attack immigrants, the very immigrants who are putting food on their table.
And I'll have to. I think we're going to have to leave it there, Ramon. I appreciate you joining us this morning. And if for all those who want to find out more information, you can log on to www.pcun.org. That was Ramon Ramirez, president of PICUN out of Woodburn, Oregon.
11 Latin American countries have agreed to a coordinated lobbying campaign against a tougher immigration bill in the U.S. This from the BBC. Officials from the 11 countries met in Colombia and showed concern about the bill being debated in the U.S. Senate and wanted jointly to promote Hispanic immigration. The U.S. proposal backs a 700-mile fence on the Mexican border, where Washington has accused Mexico of not doing enough to stem the flow of illegal immigrants into the U.S. The 11 countries meeting in Cartagena, where Mexico, the Central American nations, plus Colombia, Ecuador, and the Dominican Republic. The officials have decided to send a mission to Washington next week to identify the U.S. lawmakers on the immigration debate. Latin American governments would urge U.S. legislatures to change or defeat the bill that has already been passed by the U.S. House of Representatives. The U.S. bill also covers the use of troops and police to halt migrants and tighter employment controls.
The NAACP and black legislators have demanded that the state of Florida immediately close its boot camps for juvenile delinquents after a 14-year-old boy died hours after entering one of the facilities. A videotape that some state lawmakers have said shows guards beating Martin Lee Anderson has yet to be made public. The Miami Herald and CNN sued the Florida Department of Law Enforcement on Monday to obtain its release. Anderson died January 6th. At a Pensacola hospital a day after he entered the camp because of an arrest for theft. The Florida State Conference of the NAACP wants an independent investigation by either an independent prosecutor or the U.S. attorney for civil rights violations. Governor Jeb Bush said the tape would be released upon completion of the investigation in the next few days. Two other black teenagers have died in state custody in the past 3 years. 17-year-old Willie Lawrence Durden III was found unconscious in his cell at a Citrus County Juvenile Correction Center in October, and Omar Paisley, also 17, died from a burst appendix that went untreated in June 2003 at a juvenile detention facility in Miami. The state paid Paisley's mother nearly $1.5 million to settle a lawsuit filed over his death.
L.A. Police Commission is set today to revisit its decision to keep secret the names of police officers involved in shootings. The reconsideration comes after a week of criticism from community and government figures that ensued since the commission's overturned a 25-year-old policy of releasing officers' names. The decision to keep officers' names secret was first made 2 months ago during closed-door meetings. The commission upheld that decision last week with a unanimous vote. On Monday, State Senator Gloria Romero called for a reversal of that decision. She criticized the commission for increasing secrecy and for making the decision out of public view.
An attorney for the Boy Scouts of America has told a federal appeals court panel that a lower court erred when it ruled that San Diego was promoting religion by granting the organization long-term leases to city parks. Attorney George Davidson said the group has no theology and only holds the position that children should do duty to God in order to become productive citizens. A federal judge ruled in July 2003 that San Diego acted improperly when it leased 18 acres of Balboa Park camp space to the Scouts. The judge ruled that the group is a religious organization and the lease violated the federal establishment clause that prohibits the government promotion of religion. The panel is expected to release a decision in 3 to 6 months.
Police in Santa Cruz, California, released a 600-page report Friday detailing its internal probe of surveillance conducted on do-it-yourself New Year's parade meetings. City officials, who initially praised the report as thorough and complete, are now backpedaling and have authorized an independent investigation. FSRN's Vinny Lombardo has more.
Grant Wilson of Santa Cruz Art and Revolution says the police investigation was a complete waste of time and resources.
It's amazing what the police can come up with in terms of material, but really in terms of substance and action, there's really nothing there.
The internal investigation was led by Deputy Chief Kevin Vogel, the same man who authorized undercover agents to infiltrate parade planning meetings. The officers involved were cleared of any wrongdoing. Vogel's report says police did nothing wrong because it claimed the New Year's parade jeopardized public safety. But Bob Aronson, the independent police auditor under contract with the city of Santa Cruz, rejected Vogel's report as incomplete and flawed, saying there was a conflict of interest.
It was inappropriate for Deputy Chief Vogel to conduct the investigation into his own decision to use undercover officers.
Aronson was tapped by City Manager Dick Wilson to conduct a supplemental investigation that will determine how and why police decided to use undercover officers to get the information they wanted.
My issue is that at first glance, without any other effort, a decision was made to try to put undercover officers into the organizing meetings.
The undercover officers used fake names and contact info, helped with parade logistics, and consumed alcohol at planning meetings. The internal audit reveals a pattern of abuses by police, says Rico Thunder, a parade planner who was a major focus of police surveillance.
The Santa Cruz PD used their presence at the planning meetings to gather information about community groups and First Amendment activities taking place. They used this information to monitor events and tip off other outside agencies.
This is the war on dissidents and the war on the Constitution come home to Santa Cruz.
Local peace activist Sherry Connable marched in the New Year's parade, but had no involvement with its planning.
It is not up to the police chief to fix this. It is not up to the city manager to fix this. It's up to us to fix it, and the only way we can fix it is if our elected representatives speak on our behalf.
Activists want a stringent policy that safeguards the First Amendment rights of citizens engaged in political work. The city's Public Safety Committee, tasked with overseeing police policies, agreed to wait another month for Aronson's report before making policy recommendations. In Santa Cruz, California, I'm Vinny Lombardo for Free Speech Radio News.
Five government whistleblowers said yesterday they had faced retaliation for calling attention to alleged government wrongs, such as prisoner abuse in Iraq and illegal surveillance at the National Security Agency. They told their stories to the House Government Reform Committee's National Security Subcommittee. The chairman of the committee, Republican Representative Chris Shays, indicated an interest in altering the law to better protect national security whistleblowers. In written testimony, Inspectors General from the Defense, Justice, and Energy Departments said complaints of reprisals involving security clearances were rare. The five whistleblowers who have made headlines before offered their stories at yesterday's hearing. Many described their inspector general as ineffective or co-opted by the security offices. Army Specialist Samuel Province laid out what he considered to be a pattern of systemic abuses at Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison. He said his rank was reduced for disobeying orders not to speak out about mistreatment he saw at the prison.
Pre-September 11th intelligence conducted by a secret military unit identified terrorist ringleader Mohammed Atta 13 different times, a congressman said yesterday. During a Capitol Hill news conference, Republican Representative Kurt Weldon said the unit, codenamed Able Danger, also identified a problem in Yemen 2 weeks before the attack on the USS Cole. It knew the problem was tied into the port of Aden and involved a U.S. platform, but the ship commander was not made aware of it. If anyone had told the Cole's commander that there was any indication of a problem in the Aden, he would not have gone there, Weldon told reporters. He just had no clue. Since August, Weldon, vice chairman of the House Armed Service Committee, has pushed Congress and the Pentagon to investigate the workings of Able Danger, which used data mining to identify links that might indicate the workings of terrorists. If he is correct, it would change the timeline for when government officials first became aware of Atta's links to Al-Qaeda.
Quoting counterterrorism sources, the Washington Post reported that a U.S. government database of alleged international terrorism suspects or people who aid them includes 325,000 names. The number has more than quadrupled since the list was formed in 2003. In 2003, the National Counterterrorism Center, or NCTC, was formed to be the primary U.S. terrorism intelligence agency. It manages the list, which started with 75,000 names. NCTC officials say the true number of people listed is estimated to be more than 200,000 because the same individual may appear under different spellings or aliases. But a Bush administration official, not wanting to be identified, says the U.S. citizens make up only a very, very small fraction of that number. Another NCTC official refused to say how many American citizens were on the list, which was compiled from reports supplied by the CIA, FBI, National Security Agency, and other agencies. The officials also declined to say how many names on the list were linked to the NSA's domestic eavesdropping program. Civil liberties groups and privacy experts expressed surprise over the number of people listed on the NCTC list, saying that it raised concerns that large numbers of innocent people could be included in government terrorism lists.
The Army has drastically increased the number of recruits who would normally be barred because of criminal misconduct or alcohol and illegal drug problems, again raising concerns that the Army is lowering its standards to make recruiting goals. This is from the LA Times. In order to accept the recruits, the Army granted special exceptions known as recruiting waivers. Last year, almost 1 in 6 Army recruits had a problem in their background that would have disqualified them from military service. The largest increase of the waivers went to recruits with a history of either criminal conduct or drug and alcohol problems. Despite the increase in the proportion of those accepted with problems in their background, the Army failed to meet its recruiting target. There was a significant increase in the number of recruits with what the Army terms serious criminal misconduct in their background. That category includes aggravated assault, robbery, vehicular manslaughter, receiving stolen property, and making terrorist threats.
According to the BBC, Australian TV channel SBS has shown previously unpublished images of U.S. torture of prisoners in Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison in 2003. The photos shown were from the same source as those that were released earlier. SBS says the new images show homicide, torture, and sexual humiliation. The pictures are part of a court case in the U.S., and a judge has ruled they can be published, but the case is continuing. One of the videos broadcast on the SBS program, Dateline, appears to show prisoners being forced to masturbate to the camera, while some photos are said to show corpses and images of prisoners with body and head wounds. Some of the pictures have been posted on the SBS website. in response to a request from the American Civil Liberties Union for access to 87 unseen images, a New York judge ruled that pictures of the alleged abuse should be released under Freedom of Information provisions. The judge rejected the government's arguments that publication could fuel anti-U.S. feelings.
U.S. and European regulators have launched a probe of transatlantic cargo carriers, examining possible price fixing in the air cargo industry. The European Commission carried out surprise inspections yesterday at several major European airlines, while the U.S. Justice Department issued subpoenas. British Airways, Air France, KLM, Lufthansa, and Luxembourg's Cargolux Airlines all confirmed they were cooperating with authorities investigating the pricing practices in the industry. The largest U.S. airline, American Airlines, received a subpoena from the Justice Department as part of an investigation into practices in the air cargo industry. And United Airlines said its United Cargo office in Frankfurt, Germany, received an inquiry from the European authorities.
About 50,000 unionists demonstrated outside the European Parliament in Strasbourg, France, yesterday. This as the Parliament debated a revised version of the controversial Bolkestein Directive on creating a free market in services throughout the European Union. Tony Cross reports from Paris.
The Bolkestein Directive caused widespread protests last year, especially in France, where it boosted the no vote in the referendum on a European constitution. But conservative and socialist Euro MPs have drawn up a compromised version, which is due to be voted on Thursday. The new draft states that workers will be subject to the wages and conditions of the country where they're working, rather than their country of origin as before. And it allows countries to refuse access on the grounds of security, or protection of the environment, health, or consumers, as well as excluding some key sectors, such as mail and social services. The hard left, the Greens, and the French socialists still say they'll vote against. Even the unions are split. Some back the changes, while others say that there are still several grey areas over how controls will be enforced and the status of public services. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Tony Cross in Paris.
Syria has switched the prime. Syria has switched the primary hard currency it uses for foreign goods and services from the U.S. dollar to the euro in a bid to make it less vulnerable to pressure from Washington. The decree signed by Syrian Prime Minister Najib al-Othari on Monday ordered government bodies and public sector companies to use euros to pay for foreign transactions, including payment for exports. The head of the state-run Commercial Bank of Syria was quoted as saying yesterday that the switch to euros was, quote, important and necessary in light of the current U.S. threats against Syria and the ensuing complications in banking procedures and transfer operations to Syria from U.S. and European banks.
Israel is threatening to sever all contact with the Palestinian Authority if the next prime minister is affiliated to Hamas. This is from the BBC. Israeli Defense Minister Shaul Mofaz said it would be inappropriate to deal with the Palestinian Authority after Hamas won a majority in last month's parliamentary elections. But Israel previously stated it would work with the Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas if he did not cooperate with Hamas. Abbas has said he will ask Hamas to form the next government, but called on it to respect the previous agreements, such as the international peace plan known as the Roadmap. Speaking ahead of the first session of the Palestinian Legislative Council, Mofaz said all official ties would be cut if Hamas members were appointed to positions of power. And near the West Bank town of Jenin, Israeli soldiers killed a young Palestinian boy with learning disabilities. Mujad al-Samid, said to be in his teens, was shot through the chest during a raid.
The outgoing Palestinian Legislative Council has granted broad new executive powers to the president. Manar Jibrin reports.
Late Monday afternoon, the outgoing Palestinian parliament empowered Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas to appoint a new constitutional court that would have far-reaching powers, including the capacity to cancel future legislation. Hamas criticized the move, saying that it is an attempt to undermine Hamas's right to rule the parliament. Anwar Zboun, a newly elected PLC member of Hamas, described the move as illegal.
The This constitutional court is illegal. Therefore, we will work to change these bills passed yesterday. We consider this as an attempt to strike the Palestinian democracy that brought us to this parliament.
The new parliament, which will have 76 Hamas members out of 132, will be sworn in on Saturday amongst increasing pressure by the United States and the donor countries to stop aid to a Hamas-formed government. This is Manar Jibrin reporting from Palestine.
And that's the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, February 15th, 2006. Weather for today calls for partly sunny skies with temperatures reaching the mid-40s. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM on translator K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. You can log on to our website at kboo.fm. Our producer for this morning's newscast is Brian Smith. Our assistant producer is Chris Andre. Our engineer is Boone Rivas. The KBOO Morning News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Carlos Chavez.
Coming up later this morning on KBOO, at 7:30, Barbara Bernstein hosts Locus Focus Talk Radio. She'll talk about the Bolivarian Revolution in Venezuela and more on the World Social Forum in Caracas with guest Patrick Angstompour and Portland activist Elizabeth Attlee and Ellen McKeever. At 9, it's Veterans Voice with Northwest Vets for Peace. At 10, on People Rise Up, Andrew Geller features part 3 of It Is Happening Here, a year-long series investigating fascism in the U.S. government and society. Ann Fagan Ginger, director of the Micheljohn Civil Liberties Institute, and Jennifer Descal, advocacy director of the U.S. program at Human Rights Watch, will help Andrew explore whether or not the U.S. shows disdain for the importance of human rights. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. That's all right here on KBOO, your community, non-corporate, volunteer-powered, and listener-sponsored radio station. Be sure to catch the KBOO Evening News at 5 p.m. Thanks for listening.
This is the community calendar for Wednesday, February 15th. The Latino Advisory Council will host an advisory committee meeting at Roosevelt High School tonight at 6 o'clock p.m. The address is 6941 North Central Street in Portland. Following a planning session with co-chairs, Sean Cruz and Ron Marcius and Assistant Chief Dorothy Elmore, police liaison to the council, members agreed to rotate the meeting locations to open up more opportunities for community members to attend. For more information on the Latino Advisory Council and its activities, please visit the Portland Police Bureau's website at www.portlandpolicebureau.com. Portland Peak Oil presents a film event happening tonight at 7 o'clock p.m. The film, entitled Arithmetic, Population, and Energy, features Colorado University Boulder Professor Emeritus Al Bartlett giving his celebrated talk, Arithmetic, Population, and Energy, Sustainability 101. Bartlett of the University of Colorado at Boulder Physics Department has given the lecture over 1,500 times since 1969. The talk warns of the perilous effects of population growth and of growth in rates of consumption of non-renewable resources. This event is free and open to the public. Once again, that's at 7 o'clock p.m., and it will be held at the St. Francis Church Dining Hall at 1182 Southeast Pine Street in Portland. For more information, go online at www.portlandpeakoil.org. Liberty Tax Service at 2044 East Burnside will collect non-perishable food donations for the Oregon Food Bank from now until Saturday, March 18th. Liberty Tax will offer a $25 discount off the tax preparation fees of anyone who donates three or more cans of non-perishable food for the Oregon Food Bank. In addition, Liberty Tax will continue to collect old used cell phones for Cell Phones for Soldiers. Each donated cell phone is turned into phone cards, allowing overseas soldiers the opportunity to call home. Customers will receive $20 off the return for the donation of a used cell phone. For more information, call 503-233-0123. Celebrate our multicultural community here at KBOO Radio. This Saturday, February 18th, we're having a special potluck-style open house from 1 to 6 p.m. KBOO volunteers and listeners alike are encouraged to participate. So for our listeners, if you'd like to meet us and take a tour of the station, you are invited. Be sure to bring food from your own cultural heritage to share with others as we celebrate this day together. In addition, KBOO will feature special programming on the air this day, so be sure to tune in. And you've been listening to the Community Calendar. This is Alicia Olson for KBOO, listener-sponsored community radio. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the third annual Oregon Queer Youth Conference. The conference is open to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, transsexual, queer, questioning, and intersex youth and their allies under the age of 23 to get together, discuss the issues, and have a crazy cool time. The conference takes place at the Caitlin Gable School, located at 8825 Southwest Barnes Road, on Saturday, February 25th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, go to www.oqyc.org.
I'm Carlos Chavez, host of a new radio program called Chicanismo that examines the unique cultural movement and struggle of the Mexican-American or Chicano.
The program focuses on the history of the Chicano that is absent from the public school's cultural studies and on the artistic contributions of Chicano musicians, poets, muralists, and more.
Tune in to the program's pilot this Thursday, February 16th at 10 a.m.
The 9th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national town hall discussion on poverty and homelessness in America.
It's a matter of life and death for the people who are homeless.
I'm not giving up, and I don't want nobody to feel sorry for me.
I've been homeless off and on for some time.
People who are middle class or upper middle class forget that they too can become homeless.
I think it would be pretty startling for the majority of the public to know that within about two blocks from the White House itself, there are homeless people sleeping in parks.
The 9th Annual Homelessness Marathon, coming live from the streets of Atlanta, Georgia.
What we got here is a problem of human beings being treated like refuse, and I think the only solution is some sort of moral awakening.
We're in danger as long as we continue to paint homeless people in this country as somehow other.
The Homelessness Marathon on this radio station.
Hear the Homelessness Marathon on KBOO this Wednesday, beginning at 4 p.m. until 6 a.m. Thursday morning.